What are you? What are you? Yes. The topic that for discussion this morning is the question. I think it was entitled "Doctors and Paramedics Driving Home After a Call on Shabbos." It's a question that has been dealt with before. There's a basic principle, well-known principle in halacha, that pikuach nefesh is doche all mitzvahs in the Torah, with one exception, that being chilul Hashem. Included in chilul Hashem are the gimel averos of gilui raos, shvichas dam, avodah zarah, but basically, pikuach nefesh does away with everything but this one avera. We take pikuach nefesh very seriously. The Rambam in Hilchos Shabbos writes, "Kish osin dvarim halalu ha'elu ein osin osan lo ayidei goyim v'lo ayidei ktanim v'lo ayidei avadim v'lo ayidei nashim kidei shlo tei Shabbos kala b'yeneihem." You don't do these things, through people of lesser stature, so that Shabbos should not be kala b'yeneihem. And I'll come back to that at the way end. Ela ayidei gedolei Yisrael v'chachamehem. Only through Gedolei Yisrael, the ones of Machal Shabbos. And interestingly enough, I think this is the only place in the Mishnah Torah the Rambam ever uses a term such as Gedolei Yisrael. So the Rambam says, "You have Gedolei Yisrael do this, not your average citizen." The Osir lehismamea bechilul Shabbos lechol sheish basakana. You're not allowed to tarry or to delay when you're dealing with a person whose life is endangered. So when it comes to a doctor or a paramedic, particularly in our case, typically we think of, well, not in Teaneck, but in the larger Jewish community, Hatzalah. In Teaneck, obviously, is a very big Kiddush Hashem. There are a lot of members of the ambulance squad who, in fact, are from. So going on a call, generally speaking, is not so problematic. There may be minor issues to deal with. There is a question of, should one do it himself, if one can have a non-Jewish driver to do a lot of the things. The Rambam says, we don't do these things. They go in the Achronim, question this. But that's a question of, of fine details. Will it cause any delay? My impression is that a number of the Hatzalah squads actually have a Gentile driver whose job it is to drive on Shabbos. So in terms of tarrying, delaying, it's probably not an issue. So going is really not the problem. The question is, you've gone to do your life-saving duty, and now you want to come back. And at least at first glance, there shouldn't be any question at all. Pretty obvious. Why should you be allowed to drive back? There's no pikuach nefesh anymore, so it's simply a question. Are you allowed to be mechal Shabbos or not? The answer is obviously no. Now, in this particular scenario, I'm going to discount one possibility, which is addressed by some of the poskim very tangentially. It probably doesn't apply so much to doctors, but maybe more to people who drive ambulances, if you assume that an ambulance station is located centrally, so that the maximum amount of time it should take to get to any call within its range is going to be fewer than X minutes. And if you get a call on one side, and if you sit there with the ambulance till you get the next call, so it might actually take longer than that to get there. So in that case, driving back after the call may in itself be part of the next pikuach nefesh, which may very likely happen. That would partially depend on maybe statistical frequency of how often you get calls on Shabbos. If you get a call about once every 8 Shabbosos, so then that might not be a consideration. But in a situation where you get frequently multiple calls on a Shabbos, so then to drive back to the base in itself is probably a very reasonable pikuach nefesh for the next person who calls. Now, in the case of the doctor, it's not as much relevant because most cases, not always, most cases, the doctor probably goes to the hospital if he gets another pikuach nefesh call. So it's probably going to be in the same hospital if it's another hospital. So it's not clear whether or not he's gaining or losing, by going to one place or another. But assuming that possibility is not relevant, assuming it's simply a question of person's finished for Shabbos, he wants to go home, he wants to be with his family. So the question is, are you allowed to return? And as I said a moment ago, on the surface, the answer is obviously not. Why should one be allowed to do so? The question, though, has to be asked is, what if the personnel, whether it be the medics or the doctors, what if by prohibiting them from returning on Shabbos, one of two things might happen? Number one, if they know that they're going to be stuck in Shabbos in the middle of nowhere or in the middle of somewhere, but not where they want to be, perhaps they're not going to go. Perhaps there are situations where they're going to say, they don't really need me, I'm not going to go, I can do this one over the phone, I don't really have to deal with those considerations. Or perhaps, and initially the two may sound very similar or identical, but I think they're not. Perhaps the next time he's not going to go. He's got the call here, but, you know, here you have a Hatzalah worker, and he's going to say, forget it, I'm off duty Shabbos. I turn my radio off. What I can hear can't hurt me. I don't want to know about it. In which case, both of these situations potentially lead to pikuach nefesh problems. Now, a question that obviously has to be evaluated is how statistically likely is this? But I'll come back to that a little bit at the end about this concern. But just for a moment to take these two considerations, either the pikuach nefesh that one is involved in right now, the call that one gets right now, would one not go on that? Or even though one goes on this call, if we now tell him that he can't go back, and we would say in the future, he's not going to be allowed, he's not going to be willing to go because we didn't let him return this time and he has a miserable time for the rest of Shabbos and his family is upset and so on and so forth. Now, there really is a difference, I think, between these two in two ways. Number one, if we take the approach that it's dealing with the pikuach nefesh, this call that the call that he gets right now, that he's not going to go on it unless we let him return, so in a certain sense, this becomes an issue of part of the pikuach nefesh of now. It's part of pikuach nefesh of the person whose life is endangered, and not only do we, in order for his life to be saved, we have to let the doctor drive there or the medic drive there to save him and drive back because otherwise he wouldn't go. If that's the case, if such a notion is possible to have an action that is done after the fact, after you've already saved a life, and still treat that as part of this pikuach nefesh, so that would be a normal case of pikuach nefesh. It doesn't require any special kind of takana, any special kind of communal ordinance. That's called pikuach nefesh, just as you have to do things before, you have to do things after. If, however, you are concerned with the pikuach nefesh of the future, this more abstract pikuach nefesh, that if you don't allow him to return now, in the future people are not going to be willing to go, not just this person, but in general, so then what you're talking about is perhaps more of a communal takana, because the pikuach nefesh is not immediately here. This is more of what we would call a chashash lasid lavo, that to someone, you know, people don't want to get involved in this work. But in order, if that is the argument one is going to make, it would probably require more than simply a calculation of an individual, whether or not he's willing to go, but rather a communal takana. And then that becomes a question of who is entitled to make such a takana. We will talk about at least one situation where it's clear you have Chazal making takanos for pikuach nefesh, for chilul Shabbos, and other sorts of things, where they make these blanket takanos even in situations where perhaps there really is no immediate pikuach nefesh, or maybe there's no pikuach nefesh at all, but out of a concern that there will be cases, if we don't have a blank, you know, a uniform policy, there will be situations that will lead to pikuach nefesh.
The definition of pikuach nefesh. The Torah, to start with, according to what was said, is a broad view of pikuach nefesh and expands to the next.
I don't think so. I mean, I think pikuach nefesh has some very, very definite limits. It has statistical limits. I think it's clear there are certain, in a number of halachic sources, there are certain issues of immediacy. There's the pikuach nefesh of, you know, X, you know, who knows, you know, years off is not necessarily a consideration. So I can't tell you exactly what the line is, but it seems to be the way the post can treat it when you deal with, you know, something which is a chashash lasid lavo, so it seems that's a takana. There are situations which are clearly usur, but nonetheless, Chachamim said you do it anyway because we need a uniform policy. You know, even if one argues that's a larger part of pikuach nefesh, I would still tell you that who was koveya that? In other words, when you have an immediate pikuach nefesh, it's a statistical rub. Is the person going to die? Is he likely to die? Is his life endangered? When you talk about, well, you know, are we concerned that someone is going to, you know, in the future, you know, these number of people, that already, you know, who's koveya that?
It's similar to the patient saying, I need to see more light. The patient can't even see, but it's part of the built-in
definition. No. That's a different issue. That's a different issue. Because no. That's an immediate pikuach nefesh. That's for the psychological needs of the patient, even if he can't see.
But so maybe the doctor has psychological needs which are built into the very definition of helping somebody.
Okay. There's no pikuach nefesh on the doctor, though. At least presumably not. There is another consideration also, which works sort of the flip side here. If one adopts the position that it's a communal, that there should be or is some kind of communal takana, then no doctor, in a sense, would be entitled to violate it. If hypothetically, and certainly no clear takana exists as such. But let's say we made a takana, the community made a takana, the doctors have to drive back after the, are allowed to, perhaps have to drive back at their calls on Shabbos, because otherwise we're afraid that they're not going to go in the first place. So in such a, if that were the case, then we would argue that a doctor is mechuyev to drive back. It's not simply an option if he wants to be machmir latzmo, because if he does so, then he creates an atmosphere in which it's already regarded as a b'dieved, and then some doctors are not going to drive back, and some doctors won't go. Whereas, and therefore it might be everyone is obligated to do so. Whereas, if it's a consideration of a specific case of pikuach nefesh, if I don't go, if I can't come back, I won't go, but it's not this larger takana, so then, in fact, it might depend upon every individual situation. A doctor who is perhaps more sensitive or more mifunak, depending on your perspective, to the issues of chilul Shabbos. So the individual doctor would have to evaluate, well, listen, if I don't go back now, would I have gone on this call or not? And if his answer is he would not have gone, then he should drive back or can drive back. If his answer is that I would still have gone anyway, then he should not drive back, because it's not a larger takana where we're concerned about everyone else, but it simply is this part of the pikuach nefesh of the doctor or the medic driving there or going there in the first place. Now, the first source I want to take a look at is the Gemara in Beitza. The Gemara in Beitza seems to deal with something that seems to be, at least initially, completely unrelated, food on Yantif. The Gemara says as follows, Omar Ula, Shlosha Dvarim Hitiru Sofa Mishrim Tchilasan, V'Elu Hein, Or Lifnei Hadorsan, Utresi Chaniris V'Chazaras V'Tiyah B'Mikdash. Or lifnei hadarsan means you shechet the behemah on Yom Tov, and you've stripped the meat off, and you have the hide, and if you leave the hide sitting, and nothing is done to it to sort of begin the tanning process of people stepping on it, or working, you know, whatever physical labor that's done to press the hide, so then the hide is going to spoil. If the hide spoils, there's a great economic loss in that. For us today, maybe we don't notice this, but they used to use all parts of the behemah. So if you don't allow the or lifnei hadarsan, so we're afraid that the person is not going to shecht. The behema, and who will be nimna, he will refrain from actually participating in the full Simchas Yom Tov. Trezei Chanuyos, they had these little, cabinets, which apparently were sitting when there was Shasarat in some public place. They had spices in them, and in order to get to them, you had to remove a door. When you were done, you would put the door back. And if we don't, putting the door back could potentially entail a malacha, and it's not necessary for ochel nefesh. Once you've taken the door off, you have your spices. There's no more ochel nefesh putting the doors back. Nonetheless, they permitted putting the doors back because the fear that he wouldn't take the doors off in the first place, and he wouldn't be able to cook, you know, the best food for Yantiv. And finally, v'chazaras v'tiyah b'mikdash, if a kohen was to do avodah on Shabbos and had a bandage on, he may have had to take the bandage off for a couple of possible reasons, chatzitza, and the problem putting the bandage wasn't so much the bandage, but it was the bomb that was underneath, and there was a concern about mimareach on Shabbos. And therefore, they permitted chazaras v'tiyah b'mikdash for fear that if you don't allow the kohen to put it back on, he won't take it off in the first place. If he can't take it off in the first place, though, then he can't do avodah. Okay. So anyway, so now the Gemara, what? Well, we're afraid that maybe there aren't so many Kohanim around, and there'll be, the Avoda will be in the spot though. My impression is the concern is that they won't do Avoda, that's possible as well. Then, now the Gemara continues. Or lifnei hadarsan, why did Ula have to tell us this? It's a Mishnah. Or lifnei hadarsan tanina. The Mishnah says that magbianis or lifnei hadarsan, nosenis or lifnei hadarsan. So why did Ula have to tell us this? So the Gemara says as follows: Mahu detema tamayi de beisilim mishum dechas in the mizgalayu vafilim erev yom tovnami. I would have thought that the reason why the Mishnah permits doing so is not because Chachamim made a special heter, but simply because the Or is not muksa. Why? Because the Or, even before it was worked over, could have been used as a mattress, as a cushion. Someone could sit or lean upon it, and therefore there's no issue at all in moving it. So Kamash Malon, and there would be a halach nafgamina. What if a person had shechted the animal from before Yom Tov? So before Yom Tov, you can do whatever you want to the hide. Whatever you want to set up, you set up before Yom Tov. So we're not going to give you special kulas on Yom Tov so that you'll shech from before Yom Tov. You'll shech anyway before Yom Tov. The fact that you didn't put the or down before Yom Tov is your own fault. That's nothing to do with halacha. So So Ullah is telling us that no, that the only reason why the Or really should have been Muktzah, and the only reason why the Chachamim allowed you to now move the Or and place it in the position to begin the tanning process, is because Yitir Yosef Misham Tchilasa. If we want you to shech the Behemah on Yom Tov, we have to allow you to do things so that you can at least achieve a certain maximum economic efficiency and you won't lose by shechti on Yom Tov. You're shechti, you have the meat, the Or won't spoil, and then after Yom Tov you can actually go and do whatever you need to the hide. And the question one has to ask about these three cases is when Chachamim, when we say Hitiru Sofa Mishum Chilaso, what exactly are we being matir? In the case of Or Lifnei Hadorsan, it seems that what we're being matir is an Isur Tilfu Muksa. That seems to be the only issue. For whatever reason, it's not clear. The Rishonim, for some reason, don't address it. Having people walk on the hide is not considered a malach of ibud. It's not considered a malach of tene. I don't know exactly why. Maybe it's segregation to lichpasle. It's not clear to me exactly what it is. But but people are aware. I mean, sometimes. Whatever the reason is, that's not assumed to be an issue. But tiltul muksa would seem to be the issue. So it's an issue derabbanan. So he tears himself mishum tchilasa, as we might say in another expression, heim amru v'heim amru. The chacham prohibited moving muksa, and they permitted moving this muksa. You take the case of chazaras v'tiyah b'mikdash. So again, there, it's a gzera not to put, one does not have to violate the malachim amareach to put the bandage on. There are ways of using ointments without actually creating a smooth layer in such a fashion that it's a malach of the reis or even a malach of the rabbanon. But normally what people often do is they put the ointment on, they rub it, and they form a nice smooth layer. And that is a concern in the amareach. So here it's a gzera mid the rabbanon not to put a ritiya back, to put a ritiya on. And the Chachamim, Wumatir, the Gzeira, they weren't perhaps the Einshus, the Mikdash, that's actually the Sugi of Einshus, the Mikdash, they weren't the Gozer and putting Ritiya back on in the Mikdash. Now the question is, what about Hachzaras Treisen? Hachzaras Treisen is the one case where perhaps one could run into potential Isra Malacha. It depends upon the question of Binyan and Stira Bekalim. And it's not clear from this Gemara, the simple reading of the Gemara, though a number of Rishonim go out of the way to read it differently, I didn't quote that piece, is that the Gemara had an expression as follows, just like we saw here by Or Lifnei Hadorsan, Ma'u detema de tamay de beisilim mishum te'ein binyan bekelim ve'ein stira bekelim, kamash melani tira sofa mishum t'chilasam. So the simple reading of the Gemara suggests that there is binyan bekelim, there is stira bekelim, there really is a malacha involved, but that apparently is not a concern. The reason why it's mutter, even though there's binyan bekelim, is because he tears himself from mishum tchilasa. And if you read the Gemara that way, and I think that's the simple reading, so if the fact the binyan bekelim that the Gemara is assuming exists is daraisa, then you would have a heter malacha of a heter isa daraisa for the considerations of he tears himself from mishum tchilasa, even though there is no ochel nefesh mal. Mark, comment?
The problem is that they can be matzah daraisa.
It sounds very strange.
There
may even be a maskana. I mean, there are sources, although which I don't think have been pointed out before, which would suggest the fact that there are certainly shitas who hold that imati yisun daraisa in my tiyur to yourself mishum chilasa. And I'll talk more about that later. We're getting there. You can give me a chance.
It's part of the basic hetter. You're allowed to.
But the problem is. Again, I'll come back and talk about that. Well, where do you have such a notion that you've done, here in this case, you've done your ochel nefesh already. You've taken the door off the thing.
It's a one package. But this package is mutter mishum ochel nefesh.
But that's a tautology. You're just taking the question redefined as the answer. Why should that be?
Okay.
I mean, you're saying it's all one action. It's very nice. But why?
Okay.
I don't know if I'm going to have a better answer in the end, but at least I want to find a certain precedent. Okay. I have a couple of sources for this, yes.
If it's one action, then what's Hatiru? That's part of the...
No. Nefesh. Okay, no, but Hatiru would mean they're Magdir. They define the Gedarim of what is considered one action. Clearly, I mean, ask the following question, very simple question. A doctor goes into a hospital, he turns on a machine to save a patient, or, you know, starts pumping oxygen or whatever, okay? Now the patient survives, they take the patient off. Can the doctor shut off the machine? There's a hefsin mamun, but that's a kind of question. Is where does the action end, and you want to really a new action? And when you want to a new action, now you have to ask the question: well, is the pikuach nefesh or not? So I think that's correct fundamentally. It's a question of defining the action, but I want to look for sort of a halachic basis for something that happens after the fact being defined as part of the action.
Are these the only three, or are there only three
in this sugya? That's Ullah says. These sounds like these are the only three. The Gemara asks from two other cases, and it rejects them. One having to do with, one is machlokas for the Yudna Chachamim in Chagiga, and the Gemara has one other case it asked on. So it sounds like it's supposed to be a comprehensive list. Let me go on, because we'll come to that. So the Gemara itself, though, certainly the way many Rishonim read it, some very explicitly for this reason, it's not clear that we ever say Hitiru Sofa Mishum Tchilaso by an Issa Daraisa. But certainly by the Rabbanans, there is precedent for saying Hitiru Sofa Mishum Tchilaso. Now the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah, which in some ways almost deals exactly with our question, the question we started with, not the abstract question, but the real question, says as follows. Chatzir Gedola Hoysa B'Yushalayim U'Beis Yazek Hoysa Nikres. Ulusham Kala Edem Iskansin. So there was one large chatzir in Yerushalayim where it was called Beis Yazek, and the Edom who came to testify about Kiddush HaChodesh, which is Docha Shabbos, the Edom coming is Docha Shabbos. So Beis Din Bokenos Hashem, and Beis Din would check them out there. Usudos Gedolos Osem Lehem Bishvil Shirigim Lavo. So here you have the institution of the Hot Kiddush on Shabbos. They used to make big sudos there so that the people would come. Something about Jews and food.
It was in the chatzir.
You know. Okay.
It was outdoors.
Oh, okay. Unless it was a covered chatzir. Chatzir Mekar. So they needed an incentive for people to come. More things change, the more they stay the same. Barishona lohayu zazim yisham kalayom. So originally, once the Edom came, they were stuck in the chatzir the entire day. What is the issue here? Well, generally speaking, once a person leaves their tchum, their original tchum Shabbos, so if you go outside the tchum, me'ikar adin, you only have dalet amos. You can only, you're now stuck, and you only have your makom. And your makom is defined as your dalet amos. That's about how big a person would be with his, I forget, for his body and the something else. His hands? I know, but there's three amos for his body, and I forget what the other amma is for. Was it for his hand? I don't remember. Okay, so you basically have four amos. The Tanaim and Erevin discuss how do you calculate the dalet amos, but fine, that's all you're entitled to. However, now, the Mishnah here says that they're going to make a takana. One of the things, when you have an enclosed room, that's treated as dalet amos or dalet amos. If I walked outside the tchum and I stopped in this room, I'm not limited to my tiny dalet amos, but I have the proverbial dalet amos. I have my makom. So the Mishnah says that Hiskin Rabbi Gamaliel Hazokein Shima Halchan Apayim Amal Lachol Ruach. He gave them a new tchum of 2,000 amos. V'lo Elu Buvad, and not only people who come to testify about Kiddush HaChodesh, and the truth is, the expression V'lo Elu Buvad Ela'af is a very problematic one. Both Ramosh and Rosh Shlomo Zalman sort of wrestle with this, why the Mishnah thinks that the following is a bigger Kiddush. Why not only do we permit this for Kiddush HaChodesh, but we permit this even B'Koach Nefesh. But that's not, it may have pushed Ramosh into saying certain very interesting things. But for the moment, we're going to ignore this point. Ela'af HaChachama HaBali Yaled, the midwife who comes to deliver a baby, V'HaBala Hatzim and Hadleka, the fireman, Umin Hagayas, the policeman, Umin Hadar, Umin Amapoles, the general emergency workers, Harei Elu Ka'an Shei Ha'ir. They have, wherever they go, they get a new tchum there, V'yesh Lam Apayim Amal L'chol Ruach. The question, so basically in order, apparently, and as the Rishonim will say, this is probably also Hitiru Sofa Mishum Tchilaso, so apparently they made a takana that you get a new tchum. And the question is this an Issi D'Oraisa Netemati, or an Issi D'Rabban, and what's going on here? So, as far as the general question of the prohibition of tchumen, an issur which is hardly known to people today because our communities are so large and people don't normally walk. Occasionally it comes up, but it's not so often. You want to walk across the George Washington Bridge, so you have a tchum question. But probably you can connect the dots of the houses through most of Bergen County, and you don't encounter a tchum issue. But the issue of 2,000 amos that a person has around themselves. So there are three opinions. And at the Raisa the Rabbani, you want to know what the third is. There are three opinions among the Tanaim, Rishonim, the Gemaras, as to what the status of Tchum is. Probably the mainstream position, certainly for Ashkenazim, is that all of Tchum is only mid the Rabbanon. No matter how far you walk, the whole entire prohibition is only mid the Rabbanon. The second, opposite extreme approach, is Rabbi Akiva's approach in the Mishnah and Sota, based upon this week's Parsha, about the Migrashei Ha'arim, the Migrashim around the cities of the Levim. There's a stira, whether it's 1,000 or 2,000 amos. Rabbi Akiva says 1,000 is for the Migrash, 2,000 is for the Tchum Shabbos. So Rabbi Akiva holds that even the Isser of 2,000 amos for Tchum Shabbos is an Isser D'Oraisa. Okay? Now how does that factor in this case? So the truth is, the person went outside their Tchum. The person went outside their tchum, and so they were allowed to. They did that for bikuach nefesh. So yeah, it's an issur d'oraisa, but edus achodesh is docha Shabbos, bikuach nefesh is docha Shabbos. The question is, what now? So what happens when you go outside the tchum? Is your limitation of a new dalet amos Is that a din d'oraisa? Do we say that once you went outside the tchum, well, so min haTorah, you're at least allowed a new tchum? Now the Ramban asserts that if a person goes outside the tchum with reshus, then you get a new tchum min haTorah. You're not limited to your dalet amos, you get a new 2,000 amos. You reset the clock. Okay? What?
So what does it do with the word iskinu?
No, no, there's still an issa d'rabbanan, but midaraisa it would be mutter. Midaraisa, if you went outside, so it would be mutter to do so. Now, so Rabbi Akiva's issue may depending upon what you hold when a person has gone outside the tchum, whether the issa moving more than 4 amos is d'rabbanan d'raisa, you might be dealing with an issa d'raisa here. The third shita, which is based upon a Yerushalmi, the Rambam and the Rif both pasken this way, I don't remember, the Mechaber may quote this as well, is that the tchum of 2,000 amos is only an issa d'rabbanan. But the tchum of Yud Beis Mil, or Gimel Parsaos, which is 12 times 2,000 amos, that issa tchum is an issa d'raisa. If that is the case, so what about, how does this relate to our Mishnah? So Shlomo Zalman points out, very sharply, that in fact, if Rabban Gamliel gave a blanket heter of people to move 2,000 amos, or if the Takana was a new 2,000 amos, it potentially involves an Issa D'Oraisa. Very simply, why? Supposing a person went to the emergency call and he traveled 11 and a half mil. He traveled 11 and a half tchumen. So at this point, min haTorah, he has not exited his tchum. So min haTorah, he's still inside his tchum. If you give him a new tchum now of 2,000 amos, you're now allowing him to go beyond the Issa D'Oraisa of Yud Beis Mil. And yet the Mishnah makes no such distinctions. Now, one could argue, of course, that the Mishnah is assuming that there's no tchum d'oraisa. But certainly for the Rambam and the Rif, who hold that way, who paskin that there is tchum d'oraisa of Yud Beis Mil, and yet they quote the Mishnah Ketzurasa, so there are scenarios in which one is permitting an issa d'oraisa of tchumin for the why? Because he tears himself from Mishum Tchilasa, as we'll see. Basically, you don't want to make life uncomfortable for the people who come. So you enlarge that tchum, you make it a little bit livable. Mark?
Or the same notion that people said was Ramban, that once you go 2,000 amos, d'oraisa cannot lock. You just got a new location. You'd say the same thing for the mill.
No. That's why Rishon Mazan picked the case. As if you had gone more than 12 mil, you're right. But you've gone 11 and a half mil. So in haTorah, you've done nothing so far. You've stayed within your tchum. Okay. And now you go initial 2,000 amos. Now you've crossed the line. So the truth is, on the one hand, the Mishnah Rosh Hashanah opens up a possibility that we'll mati yourself and Mishum Tchilasa by Daraisas, but in a certain sense it also slams the door, because according to the Mishnah, our case would seem to be explicitly addressed. You have a doctor, called the midwife, you have the medics, Habala Hatzil min ha-Hanar min ha-Mapolis min ha-Gayas, who are Yotze Michutzel Tchum to do so, and we give them a new Tchum, but that's all. We don't allow them to return home. Forget, not even talking about any of the malachos, any of the lametes malachos. Even if tchum, by the way, is an issa d'oraisa, it doesn't involve mises, beis, din, or kares. It's sort of a, sort of in the mechamer category. It's not one of the lametes malachos. But certainly nothing else does the Mishnah suggest would be permitted on Shabbos. Now the key sugya upon which everything revolves is the Gemara in Erevin. The Mishnah in Erevin states as follows. Misha yatza birshus. And it doesn't say what birshus means. But someone who goes out of the tchum, meaning consciously, with permission, they were allowed to do so, and all we know of, the only cases we know of that are either Eidus HaChodesh or Pikuach Nefesh. The Amru lo, and they tell them, Kfar Nasa Maisa, things were taken care of, someone else got to the call. Yesh lo apayim amal l'choruach, he gets 2,000 new amos from where he was. Im haya b'tchoch ha-tchum ki'in lo yatz, I don't want to talk about that line, but if he's still inside the tchum, it's as if he had never left. Don't ask. The Gemara talks about it, not our issue. And then the Mishnah says, Shekel, and I will point out this is it's been noted by a number of scholars in the world of the academy that the term Sheh in the Mishnah often is a substitute for the letter Vav. It's used as a conjunction rather than a reason, because this is not a reason for what was given before. So for those who are counting, this is one very good example. Shekel ayotzen lahatzil chozun lemkoman. In fact, by the way, if you look in our editions, if I'm not mistaken, you look in the printed editions of the Talmud Bavli, there's a Vav there. The original was a Shin, someone didn't like the Shin, or it's clear from the Gemara's interpretation that these were two different, the Gemara understood it as two different sections, and therefore someone stuck a Vav in. It happens a lot in our Mishnayos. So the Mishnah said initially that Misha Yotze Bershus, Yeshal Apayim Amal Choruach. And then it says, the Chol HaYotzen Lahatzil, Chozrin L'mkoman. So the first part of the Mishnah says, you get 2,000 Amos. The second part of the Mishnah says you can go all the way back. Chozer l'mkoman means you go home. Now, the Gemara picks up on this immediately. V'chal yotzen l'hatzur chozer l'mkoman. Vafilu tuva? Even more than 2,000 amos? Va'amis reisha pi mama v'tulo? The first part of the Mishnah said you only get 2,000 amos. Now you say you can go all the way back. So what's going on? Amar Rav Yehuda amar Rav shechozim mechlei zayin l'mekolman. That's what Rav said. They can carry their weapons back with them. So what does he mean by this? Chozim l'mekolman doesn't mean they get more than 2,000 amos. Chozim l'mekolman means wherever they're going to go, wherever they're going to choose to rest. So their chozim l'mekolman bechlei zayin. Their new makom, their new limitation is still 2,000 amos. But they're allowed to carry their weapons with them. Why? The Gemara will explain why later, the significance of carrying their weapons, that it was based upon a Maisa Shehaya, and they made a Takana to carry their weapons. Now, is the carry of the weapons here Nisa Daraisa? So the answer is possibly yes. A number of Rishonim say that way, and even Rosh Shlomo Zalman, once upon a time, originally he had written, he didn't think that there was any heter by Daraisas, then he acknowledged that the weight of evidence of the Rishonim is there are Daraisas involved here, potentially carrying your weapons, if you carry it through a Rosh HaSarabim, for starters, there you have a Malacha Daraisa. According to Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, there's no contradiction between two halves of the Mishnah because they're addressing two different issues. One is addressing the distance issue, the tchum issue, and the other one is addressing a completely separate issue that has to do with you carry your equipment with you. So now the Gemara says, one second, my kusha, what was your question in the first place? There's no contradiction in the Mishnah. Dilma lahatzil shani. The ratio and the save of the Mishnah are not talking about two identical cases. The first part of the Mishnah is misha yatza bishus. The second part is v'chala yotzin lahatzil. So the Gemara suggests maybe the first part is dealing with cases that don't involve pikuach nefesh, don't involve hatzala, and the only example I'm aware of is edus hachodesh. And the second part of the Mishnah is dealing with pikuach nefesh. So theoretically, based upon our Mishnah alone, if you yotze brushos, but it's not to save life, so you only get a new 2,000 amos. If you yotze for pikuach nefesh, so then you can go back home. So the Gemara says, Eloikash ha'akasha. Now, that wasn't the contradiction that Rav Yehuda Amar Rav was resolving. The following is the question. The Tanan, the Mishnah of Rosh Hashanah, Barishon Elo Hayis Zazim Yishon Kol Yom Kulo, Hiskin Rav Gamaliel Azokin Sheyesh Lan Alpayim Amal Chal Ruach, Velo Elu Bovana Amar Al Afilu Chachama Bal Yalid, Velo Lahatzel Men Agayis, Men Anar, Men Apolis, Men Adleka, Harehen Ka'an Sheyir V'yesh Lan Alpayim Amal Chal Ruach. So no, it was the comment was made on the Mishnah of Rosh Hashanah. There it says that a person who goes to save life, not just Eidus HaChodesh, someone who goes to save life only gets 2,000 amos. The too low, and that's it. For Amris Kalayotz and Lahatzel Chozon Mkoman, the Sefer of our Mishnah Erevin claims that you can go all the way back. So here it was to this that Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav Shechozon Bechle Zayin Mkoman. So they're allowed to go back with their weapons. Kedetanya, as we have taught in a Braisa, but we show no Hayimanichim Kle Zayin Mbayis Asamach Chochoma. They used to originally place their weapons in the house that was right near the wall, the closest house they could find. And then, once upon a time, the enemies recognized what was going on, and they chased after them. They went in to grab their weapons in a rush. And the enemies entered after them. That's a very common literary motif that appears in Chazal a number of times, that expression. They killed more of themselves than the enemies killed. I think this also has a little bit of the echoes of the passage in Maccabees. I don't know exactly, but you know this idea that this sudden panic and hiding in narrow spaces. Therefore, they shouldn't put their weapons down, but rather, as I think probably army regulations would stipulate, they always carry their weapons with them. That was the first answer the Gemara had to resolve the contradiction between the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah and the Mishnah in Erevin. In which case, Tchum, the explanation according to this first answer of the Gemara, according to Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav, is that one is permitted to move only 2,000 amos, never more, but within one's 2,000 amos, theoretically, one is allowed to carry one's weapons. Now, how extensive is that heter of carrying the weapons? And it means even in situations, theoretically, where you may not perceive any pikuach nefesh, because the concern is over maisa shahaya. This thing might happen again. What kinds of malachos would be permitted? Well, presumably anything that would be required to avert this danger. To whom would this apply? Well, since it was based upon a maisa shahaya, it would only apply to situations of carrying weapons, or whatever other malachos you might have to do with weapons. But that would be the limitation of this leniency. This is an example. In weapons? Only if you can't, only through Rosh Hashanah, but you have to assume that. A number of Rishonim say this explicitly. Leaving aside our tremendous kula of 600,000 people, the assumption is when you're walking in many common spaces, you're walking through Rosh Hashanah. And once you do away with the 600,000 requirement, it's not so hard, particularly when you assume that highways and roads between towns don't have any of the other requirements,
But they're still talking about within the city. They're just talking about
this is outside the city. This is outside.
No, talking about being prepared.
Yeah.
Talking about being prepared. Once they're on the march, I don't think there's any doubt that they can carry it.
This is returning. It means Chalayotzim, Chosin, Lemkoman, Bechle Zainan. Once you've gone out to
the case of the storage, that's up on them.
Right.
Because what it originated from is just a question of whether I walk around the city, which may have an error, with my Clay Zion.
No, you're outside.
Or whether I store them at the entrance of the city, so when I go out on my mission, I pick up my weapons.
No, the assumption of Bias Asama Chachoma was that they put their weapons down as soon as they thought they could. Because they basically tried to avoid doing any malacha with it. What's that?
You're talking about Chazara?
This is part of Chazara. It doesn't sound like it was the armory. It sounds like this was, this was sort of an ad hoc decision. They put them down as soon as they could. They wanted to avoid doing any malachas. They just put them down here. They didn't carry them any further. And I'm not, to me, exactly why it was the bias of some chachom. It's not clear. Drop them in the fields. I don't know why. But eventually, the chachom was masaking that you carry your weapons with you no matter what is involved. Mark? Why? Because if you don't say that, then you haven't resolved any contradiction.
Before the why, how?
No, because the Gemara presents a contradiction. The Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah says 2,000 amos. The Mishnah here says chozun and koman. So when you say shechozun bechleizayin and koman, how are you answering the question? The way you're answering the question is by saying that chozun bechleizayin and koman is not talking about distance. It's talking about... Yeah, if you don't do that, you theoretically you haven't resolved the contradiction. No, why would you do that? It's Klei Zainan. Yeah, Klei Zainan. You can ask the question. What's that? Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think at least the starting point would be that. Now. No. You mean for the doctor's his bag? No, but there's no sakana there. The point is, the key was the weapons, right? In other words, you run into this closed space because instead of, you were too frum, right? So you get stuck in this closed space and you're killing, what's that?
The only mock here is you would have wounded yourself
without weapons, and it may even be that when they got into the closed space, they ended up shooting at each other rather than with the weapons. So there's no, at least from the Gemara itself, there's no basis for extending it beyond Kalezaya. Okay, so that now the Gemara, though, has a second resolution suggested to the contradiction between the Mishnayos. Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak Amar, lo kasha, kan shenitzchu Yisrael es umos ha'olam, kan shenitzchu umos ha'olam es atzman. It depends who won. If we won, then you have to stay within 2,000 amos. If they win, it's a euphemism, shenitzchu umos ha'olam es atzman, they beat themselves. So if they win, so then, chosun lum koman. So here, what Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak's answer does is it takes the Mishnah at face value. Chosrin l'mkoman means all the way. It means even beyond the tchum. But when is that permitted? It's permitted when they won. Why? It's fairly obvious because it's pikuach nefesh. It's if you fight a battle and you win, so you can stand there and gloat. If you fight a battle and you lose, you have to run. It's very simple. In which case, the heter of moving here, the Gemara does have notion of being mutter to go back, to go all the way back. But it's only permitted to do so when this pikuach nefesh. That's fairly obvious. Just the pikuach nefesh allowed you to go in the first place. Your own pikuach nefesh allows you to flee. So it turns out then that even within the first view in the Gemara, within both views of the Gemara actually, halayotzin lahatzil chozer lemkoman, which either implies a special leniency of carrying your weapons, even though there's no immediate danger, or going back more than 2,000 amos because there's immediate danger, are both functions directly of pikuach nefesh. In the latter case of when the enemies were victorious, so it's obvious the pikuach nefesh. It's an immediate pikuach nefesh. In the former case, where the concern is if you put your weapons down, you expose yourself to danger later because of the ma'isa shahaya. So it's a less immediate pikuach nefesh, but it's a pikuach nefesh. But it was part of a takana min derabanan because there were circumstances where such behavior led to real pikuach nefesh by putting your weapons down, and therefore they made a blanket decree: you always carry your weapons with you. Neither of these cases would seem to match the profile of hitiru sofo mishum tchilaso. That if we don't let you go, if we don't let you come back, you won't go in the first place. It seems to be a concern of either immediate or a little bit more remote pikuach nefesh. Now, just to review very briefly, not review, but just sort of highlight the sort of three questions that now we're going to deal with. Some we dealt with it already. But as we look at both the opinions of Moshe Feinstein, Zichron Levracha, and Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, Zichron Levracha, question number one, which we already sort of emphasized, is does Hitiru Sofo Mishum Tchilaso apply by Dinim Doraisa? Number two, even if you assume that in the abstract it applies by an Issa Doraisa, does it apply by Hatzalas Nefashos? Do we ever find that Chazal were concerned that someone would violate Lo Samar Adam Reyecha, that someone would refrain from saving life because life would be inconvenient for them later? The truth is, regardless of whether we let a medic or doctor drive back from on Shabbos after the call, when that call comes in at that moment, they are obligated to go. It is Lo Samar Adam Reyecha. What happens later might be someone else's problem. Maybe, maybe not. But do we find Chazal were ever concerned that people would be misrashel, would be careless or lazy in dealing with situations of pikuach nefesh? And finally, if we don't, and if we don't find that, in fact, we won't find that, even if Chazal weren't concerned, should we be? You know, we say nishtanu hatfayim, you know, we assume that it's a yiridas hadoros. Maybe Chazal didn't have to be concerned about it. They were all holy tzaddikim, except for a few people. And today, maybe those concerns, you know, maybe the balance has shifted. All right? Now, I'll start first with a well-known tshuva, Ramosha. I think it's often misquoted. People often talk about Ramosha having matir doctors to drive back on Shabbos after a call. I have not been able to find any such tshuva, Ramosha. I asked Rabbi Tendler. He thought it was in this tshuva and the next tshuva. It's not in the Igros Moshe, that's for sure. I happened to ask the person to whom the Shiloh was originally addressed to Rav Moshe by his grandson, Rav Mordechai Tendler, so I haven't asked him yet whether or not he ever asked about doctors. But Rav Moshe's Shiloh was not about doctors, it was about Hatzalah people. And first he gives you a very nice poetic description, how wonderful, it tells you something of where he was 30 years ago, where Moshe was coming from, how it's so nice that we have so many Jews living in certain places, and they get together and they make a Vad Hatzalah, and it's really a wonderful thing. And now the question was, because that's all people drive back on Shabbos.
Is there an obvious difference between Hatzalah and doctors?
Yeah, I think so. If you're a Hatzalah person, what does it cost you not to go on Shabbos? Nothing. If you're a doctor and you get called on Shabbos and you don't go and the patient dies, what does it cost you?
In spite of what you said 5 minutes ago about Lo Samar Adam Reyecha, we're focusing here on practicality.
Correct. Lo Samar Adam Reyecha, to anyone who can save life, applies.
That was the main focus.
I'm not sure that that's true. No, I didn't say that. And the third question was, if Chazal weren't concerned that people would be misrashel, do we have to be concerned? In other words, Lo Samar Adam Reyecha applies. The question is, are we afraid that people aren't going to observe it properly? There may even be a difference between a person who's paid and not paid. Not so clear.
But I'll mean, you join Hatzalah if he's not concerned with his meat.
Okay, but in other words, you join Hatzalah.
Why are you doing Hatzalah on Tuesdays and Wednesdays?
Because there's the thrill of the chase and he's saving life, but Shabbat doesn't come at such a big price, right? Probably he thinks that it comes out of his employer's time. So, whereas on Shabbos, it comes out of his time.
And in all the sources, until 100 years ago, doctors will lose their jobs? I mean, if Rishon talked about it.
Rishonim don't talk about this question because it was very rare. We live in an unusual circumstance where you can get to someone's pikuach nefesh who's 20 miles away in 20 minutes. So for them, if
they
person...
They didn't call a doctor.
Yeah, how did you know? How did you know if the guy wasn't in your shchuna? So Rav Moshe talks about the question of people in Hatzalah. So Rav Moshe pointed to two Rishonim. I picked the Rashba here as one of the two Rishonim who seemed to say the same thing. The Rashba in Beitza asked the following questions, the fifth source. The Im Tomar, V'amaylo kachashiv hadetanan be'erivim meperek mishaho tzi'uhu, kalayotin lahatzu chozun l'koman. V'chein chachama haba liyale. Why did Ula only count those three? Why didn't he count the Mishnah and Erevin and notice which half Rashba quoted? This is the problem. He quoted not the first half, not the first half that says if you go after Shush, you get a new tchum. He quoted the second half, Kol Hayotzin Lahatzel Chozin Lemkoma. He quoted that, and then he quotes the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah, which we would expect. And he said, says, V'havei taimid ha'nachnam yishum di'ti yourself v'mishum t'chilasa. So he says, why did Ula not list those? He counted three. He said three times, and the Gemara insists it's exactly three. Because the Gemara asks, why didn't he count X? Why didn't he count Y? So the Rashba, once the Gemara starts asking, the Rashba says, why didn't he count Z? And why did he count W? So the Rashba answers, meaning, of course those Mishnayos are because he tears himself Mishum Tchilasa. But there was no other way to interpret. In our Gemara, the Gemara asked on each case of Ula, it said Pshita. So it said no, because you would have thought that this Mishnah invades us for a different reason. It has nothing to do with he tears himself Mishum Tchilasa. That's why Ula had to tell us that the real reason for the Mishnah in Beitza of Tresin and Or is because he tears himself Mishum Tchilasa. But the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah and in Erevin, it's obvious. There's no other way to interpret it. That's why Ula doesn't have to count them. So the Rashba seems to assume that Kol Hayotzin Lahatzu Chozin L'Mkoman is Itir Sofa Mishum Tchilasan. But we just said, what do you mean? It's not Itir Sofa Mishum Tchilasan. Depending on which one of the two answers in the Gemara you accept, either according to Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, so the Gemara was never Matir. According to Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, what the Gemara said was that people allowed to carry their Klei Zion with them. That was the Chiddush. That's not Itir Sofa Mishum Tchilasa. That's because Pikuach Nefesh, if they leave their weapons, they're going to be endangered. It was a little bit of a remote chashash, but nonetheless, they were choshesh for it. And according to the second answer, Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak certainly had nothing to do with Itir Sofa Mishum Tchilasa. It had to do with immediate Pikuach Nefesh. They won. They're chasing us. We run. We go more than 2,000 amas. So what is the Rashba talking about Itir Sofa Mishum Tchilasa? Tosos and Erevin on the Mishnah asked the same question. So Rav Moshe said, and he spent a lot of time working how they read the Gemara. Rav Moshe said, but what do you see from Tosos and the Rashba? You see that you permit an Issa D'oraisa, right, carrying your Klei Zion with you, and you permit going all the way back, because you would theoretically permit it for Hitir Sofa Mishum Tchilasa. Now, there's really no time to sort of go into how Rav Moshe reads the Gemara. It's very, very problematic. A question might be asked on the Rashba and Tosos as well. How that fits with the Gemara at all, and how do you resolve that? Then what do you do with the Mishnah Rosh Hashanah in the end? The Mishnah Rosh Hashanah, it says that you only get 2,000 amos when you go out to save life. What is the resolution? So Rav Moshe, in effect, claims that you have to distinguish between different kinds of hatzalos. Some kinds of hatzalos are ones in which we only allow you to go 2,000 amos, and some kinds of hatzalos are those in which we permit you to go more than 2,000 amos. Yes. Very good question. That would be an excellent suggestion, which in fact could have perhaps resolved if you accepted the Gemara's original Havamina, that there's a contradiction within the part of Mishnah Erev, then that would have worked. The first case is Sheyatzav Amulo Karnasa Maisa, and the second part is you succeed. The problem is the Mishnah Rosh Hashanah is, and Rishon Bazalman points this out, the Mishnah Rosh Hashanah is not talking about the earlier story when Rabbi Akiva tried to stop the witnesses, you know, the many, many witnesses who were going. So Rabbi Akiva tried stopping them because their testimony wasn't necessary. This Mishnah is talking about Edom who came and testified. And nonetheless, the Mishnah says they only get 2,000 amas. So it doesn't really work in terms of the texts. So Rav Moshe basically ends up suggesting that different kinds of hatzalos. If you, when you left, you assumed that it was a long journey, it was going to take a long time. You know, the World Trade Center, it was going to take a long time. You'd be working a long shift trying to dig out rubble. So then, when you left in the first place, if you're willing to go, you knew you were going for all the Shabbos, or you thought you were going for all the Shabbos. Ah, what if you get there and it turns out they're finished, they don't need you? But you would have gone anyway, because your assumption was you were going for all the Shabbos. Your Shabbos was shot, and you were going anyway. Whereas he assumes that the most of the Hatzalos in the Mishnah are like that. But today, where most Hatzalos are such where you know you can go, you can press a few buttons, prescribe a few medications, and go back home, so there we would be concerned that he so for Mishum Tchilasa. Now, one of the things that I should add, two closing comments about Ramosha's opinion. Number one, Ramosha adds one very important caveat, which people often forget to cite. Ramosha only permits, and he was talking about the Hatzalah people, he only permits Hatzalah people driving back on Shabbos if you can't get a guy. If you can get a guy, Ramosha categorically does not permit a Jew driving back himself. If you were in a situation where you couldn't get a Gentile driver, so then a person, he's mati the ambulance drivers driving back home. But in a situation where it's Efsha Yidei Nachwi, so then one is absolutely obligated to use a Nachwi.
If you wanted to send your to the doctors, they would have to take a cab back rather than drive back.
Yes, correct. You have to... Yes. Now, as I pointed out before, and this is a very important question, one which I'm not going to answer because it's a Metzias question. I have my own feelings about this, but I'm not... People have sort of challenged this one way or another, is you have to ask the question, is it really like an ambulance driver has no chiyuvim? He has no chiyuvim. He has basically, if he doesn't go on the call, he refuses to take the call, he turns his radio off, he has no legal liability. A doctor has a lot of legal liability and a lot of financial liability. And it's a Metzias question. Is it likely to happen, and I don't mean one in a billion times, but I mean rising to the level of what we consider pikuach nefesh, 1-2% of the time, that there's going to be real pikuach nefesh, that a doctor can't treat over the phone, because I suspect there are many cases which are technically pikuach nefesh, but the doctor just says, give this dose, give that dose, change this, change that. And it's not immediate danger, not the patient's going to die in 5 minutes, but they're really pikuach nefesh issues. Are there cases, again, where a doctor is not going to go, and where by not going, it was pikuach nefesh in the first place, by not going, that makes the difference, and he chooses not to go because it's going to ruin his Shabbos. And that's a very important evaluation that has to be made up in Metzius. If, in fact, there are such cases, and they are statistically significant, so theoretically, one could extend Ramosha's idea from Hatzalah people to doctors. Now, there still might be grounds for distinguishing between the two, but I may or may not touch upon that a little bit later. I'm not going to be that much longer. The last point I'll just make about Ramosha, and I'm going to come back to this also a bit later, is Ramosha's readings in the Gemara are very forced. In principle, though, what Ramosha says is correct, and there are at least one or two makoros in the Gemara that would suggest that at least Ramosha is right in theory, that there is such a notion of Yitir Sofa Mishum Chilasos by the Oraisas. Now, moving on to Rosh Shlomo Zalman. Rosh Shlomo Zalman disagrees. This is a wonderful tshuva. Some of you may be familiar with a tshuva Ramosha, which he writes that, people had asked him whether they could disagree with him because he was really considered the gadol, and he had no problems with, people, Tamil Chachamim, who offered opinions that were different than his. He had no problems with that. He didn't think that his way was the only way to see things. It's a statement of incredible anivus on Ramosha's part. He doesn't mention that tshuva who the person was, but the person is Rosh Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, because at the beginning of this tshuva in the Mincha Shlomo, at Simen Ches, Rosh Shlomo Zalman writes that he'd written about this a little bit already, but here he's writing about it more extensively because Ramosha wrote a tshuva about it, and he's writing about it because Ramosha gave me permission. I think it's something unbelievable. Rosh Shlomo Zalman had sufficient anivus that he was kafah to Ramosha, and he didn't want to publicly disagree with him, because of the kafah of Ramosha. Halavai, everybody should hold this way today. Anyway, Rosh Shlomo Zalman disagrees. Now, he points out that the Gemara in Erevin, as we noted already, is only an issue of pikuach nefesh. It has nothing to do with Yitir Sof Mishum Tchilaso, the second half of the Gemara. The issue of the new tchum in the Mishnah Rosh Hashanah, maybe Yitir Sof Mishum Tchilaso, and the first part of the Mishnah Erevin that called Yotzin Rishus, Yesh Lama Paim Amal Choruach, that may be Yitir Sof Mishum Tchilaso. Once you went out to say, we give you a new tchum. Okay, but that only may or may not be an issue of the Rabbanah. Now, what about the Rashban Tosa? So he points out that he suggests, and the Shita Mikubetzes and Beitza says this. The Shita Mikubetzes claims the Rashba's question from the Mishnah Erevin wasn't really on the Sefer. The Rashba was not being careful in his language, the part that he quoted. When the Rashba and Tosa say that he tiru sofa mishum chilaso, that's the reason for the Mishnah Erevin, they meant the first half of the Mishnah. The second half of the Mishnah is what the Gemara says is real pikuach nefesh. It has nothing to do with he tiru sofa mishum chilaso. I will just point out, the Shita Mikubetzes aside, the Dibur Maskil and Tosfos is, in fact, on the second half of the Mishnah, not on the first half, and then Tosfos HaRash has it the same way as well. Okay, but it happens. You know, that's not absolute proof. So the bottom line is, a pisar, certainly Rosh Shlomo Zalman is correct. The way you read that Gemara in Erevin, there's no question. It's not talking about itir sov mishum tkinaso. It's talking about pikuach nefesh. I should also add, the Rosh Shlomo Zalman, I should point out, never claims that there's no such concept as being matir isurim doraisa for itir sov mishum tkinaso. What he does claim is that we never find that Chazal were ever concerned by pikuach nefesh that people would be misrasha, that people would be indolent and not properly fulfill the mitzvah. And since that is the case, there is no reason to be matir sofa mishum tchilasa by pikuach nefesh. There's an assumption about most people is that even if it's going to ruin their Shabbat, they are going to go and save life. They will not endanger, they will not let someone else die just because it's going to ruin their Shabbos. Now, he does assume, though, that in cases where he doesn't use these terms, but in cases where there's a concern in general for this kind of pikuach nefesh, it seems that Rav Shlomo Zalman assumes you need some kind of takana. It's not based upon individuals making that decision, but really there's no pikuach nefesh. But we have to be concerned from a broader view. We have to be concerned that if we don't enact certain kinds of takanas or certain kinds of behaviors, it's going to lead to pikuach nefesh. Now, as I suggested earlier, I think the nekudas hamachlokas between Rosh Shlomo Zalman and Ramosha may hinge upon how you view this question of the doctors and the ambulance drivers driving back. I think that Rosh Shlomo Zalman viewed this as a question of nimtzeis machshilin la'asid lavo. I don't think he was concerned about the specific case, but rather that you wouldn't get people going back for repeat visits once you impose this situation upon them. And it's for that reason that he feels that in order to be matish this situation, you would need a communal takana, you would need some kind of broader powers. It's not clear that we would consider ourselves having the powers to permit chilul Shabbos in cases where there was no immediate pikuach nefesh. Whereas Ramosha felt that, no, going back to the suggestion earlier, the Yosef suggestion, that driving back after a call is part of the whole action. It's as if it's one action of pikuach nefesh. Driving back is just sort of the continuation of driving there. And therefore, Ramosha felt that this is not a question of a kamino takana, hitir sov mishum tchilaso, if the logic applies, then it means that what you're doing at the end is simply a continuation of what you began earlier. I would note as an aside, it'd be interesting to study the sociology of the difference between Ramosha and Rosh Shlomo Zalman. Ramosha wrote this tshuva in the late 70s, at which time American Orthodox Judaism was a very, very different place. Some of you here probably actually can remember that to testify in person, at least as adults. And he was writing in America. Whereas Rosh Shlomo Zalman was writing in Eretz Yisrael, and I wondered to what extent, you know, their intuition of the circumstances and how doctors would behave had an impact upon their tshuvas. I might add also that today, you know, the average yeshiva education of doctors today is far of Orthodox doctors is probably far higher than it was 25 years ago. Probably have a greater sensitivity towards issues of Shabbos, and that theoretically could affect how one approaches the issue, certainly in terms of chinuch, in terms of educating people to whom this issue applies. Now, I just want to... Yes? I don't think so. Because you're not talking about whether... You're talking about whether it is pikuach nefesh, not you're defining what's in the parameters of pikuach nefesh. Not once you have pikuach nefesh, in other words, hutra d'chuya, and so on and so forth. Usually hutra d'chuya is also with question when it's efsha yideche, and that's the typical, you know, criteria. But here it is efsha.
In a certain direction.
Possibly.
Much more careful.
Possibly.
We put everything aside and it's too
good. Okay, it's possible. What, David?
It seems from the sources then that the furthest the Gemara is willing to go, and you do something in the Chilasa in this case, is to give you the chum.
Yes.
So it's really a very limited thing. Does anybody infer from that okay, you don't want you to be stuck in a hospital?
I mean, that's Rosh Shlomo Zalman's point. I mean, I think that's the most obvious conclusion. You read the mission and you close the book. That the heter they gave was tchum. The only question you have to ask is perhaps they only gave the heter tchum because that was the only one that was relevant to them because people weren't going to go all the way back home. In other words, you're right. The Mishnah only talks about the heter of tchum, because this is it's an ukimta Rav Moshe is making. I'll give you that 100%. I think you read the Mishnah, and it would be an open and shut case. But Rav Moshe is claiming the Mishnah is only in cases normally they wouldn't go back. In other words, and to some extent that may be true. If you had to travel a great distance, so getting back before Shabbos was over, you may not have really, or it might have been, he talks about Lahatzim and Anorim and Adlik Menagayis, may have been taken many hours. It wasn't just, you know, going to the hospital, doing a quick procedure and going home. I'm not defending Rav Moshe's reading. I think I said at the conclusion, Rav Moshe's reading of the text is very forced. But the logic is not...
No, but even according to the Shmuel,
yeah.
We don't see from here that you can... I guess I don't really accept the idea that Tzlum is the equivalent of going back. That's the most you would want. It seems to me that that's a limited...
I think that's what Rav Shlomo Zalman assumes. He does assume that way.
As a practical matter, he would not necessarily say...
He doesn't, but that's not, well, truth is, even he, I don't know if it's because he's not dealing with tum issues, and he's really dealing with, he was asked about a doctor, Shlomo Zalman's writing about a doctor, his maskana is that you may go back, but only a day nachri. If you can't get a nachri, it's usher to go back. And even that, he said, that he was matir only bekoshi, because he felt the chasam sofer was already matir, klar horazakin. But he really wanted to basically prohibit even ayidei nachri. Meaning, the simple reading of the Mishnah Rosh Hashanah, there's no question about that. The question is, how does Rav Moshe read the Mishnah? And that's how he does it. He claims the Mishnah is dealing with certain kinds of cases where there was no chashash. Because people, in other words, the 2,000 amos was not necessarily for a person who would have gone back home. The 2,000 amos was for a person who wasn't going to go back home. It was too far. He was going to wait to ride a horse after Shabbos. Again, it's an ukimta. There's no question about that. Yes?
You introduced a new terminology, which is nimsos after
machshila salava. Yes.
Is that different than...
Hitir sofer. Yes. No, I think it's very much not. You know, it's not clear how meduyuk the language is. The Gemara uses both expressions, but in our case, I don't remember if it's used in the Gemara, but I think the expression is used by the Rambam in the context of the Klei Zion case of Nimseis Machshila Lasad Lavo, which is a future consideration. It's not part of this Pikuach Nefesh.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, the same thing's true by the Adim, for example.
That's Machshila Lasad Lavo. Well, that there the expression is used again.
I don't see it.
I believe the expression is used there, yes. One could argue that there really is no difference. I'm creating a distinction between the current action versus the future, and you'll see why in a second, why I'm going to get to that. Now, last couple of points before the conclusion. The Yushalmi, first of all, there is a Yushalmi, and no one, at least this is my Chiddush, because no one has pointed this Yushalmi out in Beitza. It's the last source on the sheet. The Yushalmi writes on our sugya, "Vitir yourself mishum tchilasa." Shmuel Omar, "Hamalachim es atresim yontov chayev mishum bona." A person who does this, who puts the tresim back, is chayev on yontov mishum bona, and chayev means chayev in isur d'orais. It's clear from the parallels he holds on Shabbos, yichayev achatas. The kasha, the Gemara adds, Yushalmi asks, "Davar sheilu aso b'Shabbos chayev hatas beisil matir nafla achzir." So, if it's really in isur d'orais, why would beisil be matir putting back the tresim? Because there's no heter ochel nefesh anymore. You've taken the food out already. Why are you allowed to put them back? So Rav Chanani b'shem Rav Yochanan, he threw himself from the tchilasa. They were matir soap b'shem tchilasa. Shemat omer lo shalo yachzir afuwein aposeach. If you don't let him put it back, he won't take the door off the cabinet. So the Yushalmi says, v'lo yiftach. Let him not take the door off. It's a big deal. So the Yushalmi answers, afu memayit b'simchas yom tov. No, because then he's memayit b'simchas yom tov. So you see two things from the Yushalmi. And this goes back to the question about the language. Number one, you see the Yushalmi has at least one day, and the next day I may disagree, has at least one day that holds he to yourself mishum tchilaso by ochel nefesh, forget pikoch nefesh, applies by the raises. It's number one. Number two, once you say that, once you say it by ochel nefesh, so in order to say this by ochel nefesh, you realize that the issue of itur self mishum tchilaso is not focused on the future, it's focused on the present. Why? Because it's usher to do malachas ochel nefesh on this yom tov for next yom tov, for example. Meaning when we talk about a heter for malachas ochel nefesh, itur self mishum tchilaso, it only makes sense if you're talking about the particular action at hand. We never allow you to do, I mean, if you're going to do it later that day, it may be one thing, but we're not going to allow you to put the door back on, to do malacha on this yom tov, because in the future we want you to be able to take it off. Because you're not allowed to do malacha from one yom tov for another yom tov. Let's say it's Pesach, and I want to cook food and put it in the freezer. Pesukis. It's an interesting question, right? That you're allowed to do. We cook on Yom Tov for Shabbos because we say Sarche Yom Tov Shabbos and Asim be Yom Tov, and we cook on Yom Tov for that day for Yom Tov. We don't cook on Yom Tov for Yom Tov Sheni, but that may be because Yom Tov Sheni is really chol. Can I cook on Pesach for Shavuos? I'm gonna have a lot of company on Shavuos, and I'm gonna cook then. So the answer is no. And the posture says the way we hold is in the Daraisa. I mean, you may not get Malkus, but you're not. That's cooking Yom Tov l'chol. You're not allowed to cook from one Yom Tov to another. So to say that we're matir, putting back, doing malacha on this Yom Tov, because in the future we're afraid I won't take the door off, doesn't make any sense. It only makes sense if you say that you're talking about, you're allowed to put the door back on, because if you don't put the door back on, you wouldn't have taken it off now in the first place. Which means that basically you're dealing with one complete action of Ochal Nefesh, which begins by taking the door off, removing the spices, and putting the door back on at the end. Now, the question is, going back to the original question, why does that make any sense? It's why once I've gotten what I needed, once I've saved the life, once I've gotten my Ochal Nefesh, why should it be, under what category does this idea of performing an action after the fact fall? And I'm going to suggest the following. The Rashba has very interesting questions. I think it was misunderstood by some of the people who wrote the footnotes. There's a question about doing Kisei Adam, digging to do Kisei Adam on Yom Tov for Behema you want to Shecht. And the first Mishnah deals with the question of what if you didn't have any dirt? You didn't have any dirt. So the question is, can you dig? So the Rashba in his Chidushim on Beitza asks the following question. Why don't you permit digging? The Gemara had a number of possible discussions. The Rashba says, why don't you permit the digging? Because of Machshirei Ochel Nefesh. Machshirei Ochel Nefesh. So he writes, the reason why is because it was Efshar La'asos Mibo Yom. Because he could have dug the dirt. He could have dug it from before. So let me ask the question. The whole issue with Kisei Adam is as follows. You're not chayav to do Kisei Adam until after you shecht the behemoth. So once you shecht, the chiyuv of Kisei only comes once you shecht it. Now it may be that you're not allowed to shecht if you don't anticipate having any afer, if you don't have any dirt to cover it with. But the fact is, the normal procedure would be is you shecht, and then you cover it with dirt. And if you don't have the dirt, you dig. So the question is, well, when do you dig? You dig after you shecht. And the chiv of kisuin comes afterwards. So the Rashba says that you're not allowed to dig to cover the blood of the animal that you shechted, because it's machshirei ochal nefesh, which you could have done from before Yom Tov. Scratching my head, what do you mean, machshirei ochal nefesh? Machshirei ochal nefesh means a prefatory act, right? Machshirei, normally, a classic machshirei ochal nefesh. I have a knife, I need to cut things with it. I sharpen the knife, I'm not doing something to the food, I do something to the knife which I now act on the food. Now we have a rule, even though we permit machshirei under certain circumstances, it's an issur d'oraisa to do food that you could have cooked before Yom Tov, maybe mutter to cook on Yom Tov. But machshirei ochal nefesh, the preparatory stages of preparing instruments or whatever else so that you can then do something to the food on Yom Tov, that is only mutter, even those in the Gemara who are matir, only permit it when it was when you couldn't have done it from before Yom Tov. So that's what the Rashba says here. So what's machshirei ochal nefesh? Machshirei means something that comes before. So apparently what the Rashba understood is that even though this is something that's technically can or should be done afterwards, once you have the chiv of kisei adam, because you couldn't shecht in the first place, because you couldn't do the shechita, or you wouldn't have, because halachically it was also to do the shechita in the first place, even though the digging for the kisui takes place chronologically after you shecht and you have a chiv of kisui, that's still called machshirei ochal nefesh, even though it's after the fact. Why? Because the action would never have been undertaken in the first place if you couldn't do the machshirei that happened after the fact. So it would seem then that, I don't know, we don't talk about machshirei in the context of pikuach nefesh, but it may be the same issue here. It may be the issue by Hasaras Treisen, maybe an issue by pikuach nefesh. The idea that
putting the door back is known to machshirei.
Not in the sense that it's not a physical barrier that you can't get to X without doing Y, which is normal machshirei. But machshirei means anything that makes the act doable, even if it's actual, even if the... I'm sorry to do this. I don't want to revert to any brisker form here. But even though the halos might be considered earlier, the maisa machshirei are done later. But that would seem to be what the Rashba suggested in the context of Kisei Adam, and that might be what's going on here. So in which case...
The knowledge, he's going to be able to do something 10 minutes later. Or
correct. So it's
that knowledge is essential to doing it.
Just as digging the dirt later to cover the blood is necessary in order to do the shechita before. So it could be that it falls under the rubric of machshirei. In conclusion, I would just make two observations. One is just to review the point. There is a machlokus between Rav Moshe and Rav Shlomo Zalman about this issue, to what extent we're willing to apply sofer mishum tchilasam in this context. Rav Shlomo Zalman is only matir by the Rabbanans, and Rav Moshe is willing to extend the category even to the Raisas. And even though the Gemaras that deal with our specific case seem to be against Rav Moshe, both the Svara and is reasonable, and there is a makor for this notion of itir sofer mishum tchilasam by the Raisas. However, I should point out that both Rav Moshe and Rav Shlomo Zalman, no one allows driving back unless one cannot get enough. Rav Shlomo Zalman would not be matir at all. Rav Moshe is matir if you can't get enough. I would say, in practical circumstances, it probably almost never occurs that a person can't call up a non-Jewish car service. And the notion, you know, I know someone's going to say to me on this, again, it's all a metzias evaluation, but someone might say that if the doctor has to pay, you know, for the car service, that he's not going to be willing to do it because it's going to cost the money, and it could be a little bit expensive. I would like to believe that as a community, our doctors are sufficiently religiously sensitive that the kind of money that one is talking about is really not an obstacle or a barrier to avoiding Chilul Shabbos. I certainly would hope so. And to be honest with you, I'm not sure I'd want to be treated by a doctor who valued his money so much. You know, again, I know that it is true that medicine is not perhaps as lucrative as it once was, and so there's some doctors who actually, you know, barely make it by. But there's certainly a lot of doctors where the money should not be such a large issue. And therefore, even Rav Moshe is only matir ayidei nachri if it's efshar ayidei nachri. Ira?
From a doctor, he goes to the emergency call and then has to take the cab home. If he gets another emergency call, he's got to sit around waiting for a taxi to come and get him again.
Well, the question is, but then the problem is, where is that next emergency call going to be? If it's going
to
be at the hospital...
Even if you're letting him go home...
Well, he does at the hospital. If he stays at the hospital...
No, but if we're letting him go home with his...
Okay. And the other thing you have to evaluate also is the kind of doctor. I mean, I get the impression that sometimes a doctor gets a call, you know, and he's got to literally drop everything, you know, and run to his car no matter what he's in the middle of. And sometimes the doctor gets a call, and, you know, it means he has to get to the hospital, and, you know, he has... time. I mean, it's not like, you know, it's you know, a matter of seconds, but, you know, he has to get in to do something to the patient. If he gets in there at 2:30 or 2 o'clock, it's not an issue. In which case, the answer is he should, you know, he shouldn't drive there in the first place. He should get a cab to take him there. So you're right. There may be situations in which that would come up. That would also depend upon, you know, frequency of calls. If a doctor gets calls very infrequently on Shabbos, then I'm not sure, again, how it becomes a very remote pikuach nefesh. And then the answer is you can, you know, take a cab from, you know, the next time if you have to. You may have two cars also at home. So the frequency of a... So I assume you only two. Tzvia? Right. Well, then there certainly, I don't think anyone would say, you say, it's your submission chilasa. Right? We assume, I can't remember the pasuk exactly from Eov, you know, or biad or, you know, v'cholasha, you know, anyone know the pasuk from Eov? You know, when the Satan challenges God, it's one thing to take his money, but his life, you know, people will start, you know, people don't like their bodily harm. No, I understand that, but the question is, you know, part of the assumption to Yisomishim Tchilaso that Rav Moshe is working with is that you have to give the person the incentive, which is not their obligation. You know, it's not that it can... I don't think we're concerned for the one-in-a-million case. There are people who do that even if it's not Shabbos. Right? So I that's not so much a Shabbos issue. I don't think... What stops people from going there, I don't think, is usually that I can't drive back yet because I have to wait till after Shabbos. I don't think... I mean, again, it's a Matthias question. I could be wrong, but I don't think that is the primary obstacle. I think there are more complex psychological issues and denial and things like that rather than... But again, it could be. I'm not... And I don't claim to be any kind of authority on Matthias. You know, obviously, the I want to lay out what the theoretical parameters are, and if the Matthias is different or differs from place to place, then it is applied differently. Michael?
According to the last Kaddish you said there, does that mean that every time we see Sofen Shushkulasan, we're really saying it's a Machshir Shushkulasan?
No, it's a Machshir in the act, yeah. And it presumably is Yafsha. How far as tracing.
So you're saying that these two ideas are actually identical?
No.
Sofen is a Machshir.
Yeah, but that not in the reverse. It doesn't. Not every Machshir is a Shushkulasan.
Not
yes. The last comment I would just make, I think, is a larger question, and this is more of a religious intangible. I remember a number of years ago being in the shul, sitting in the office one Shabbos morning after Hashkama, sitting and learning, and the doctor walked into the office, and he had to call him for a patient. And I sort of noticed him doing things. I remember the guy had been in yeshiva at the same time as me, and he was doing things, whatever. And I noticed that there was a certain lack of zehirus. We permit doctors doing things, but we usually require shinuyim and things that can have shinuyim done. And I noticed that there was a certain kind of lackadaisical attitude towards the things that he was doing. And it sort of occurred to me at the time that even though pikuach nefesh is mutar and shas, and sometimes one is mechuyev to do so, one of the considerations that has to be taken into account, again, this is what I would call meta-halachic rather than strictly halachic, is the effect it has on the shmir Shabbos of a doctor, meaning certain things are mutar, and maybe, again, even mechuyev, but they can have a detrimental spiritual effect. I have to imagine, this you have to ask the doctors for, but I imagine certainly the first time they ever had to do something on Shabbos, it was a very, very fearful experience. It was a very uncomfortable experience. And if you go and ask them after they've done it the fifth time, the sixth time, the seventh time, they probably weren't as uncomfortable about that. I'm guessing, because I think it's true for anything we do, whether right or wrong, it's the nature, that is human nature. Kevan, again, I'm not saying, I'm not implying that this is an avera, but using Chazal's expression, we call this cognitive dissonance in psychology. Kevan shechata adam v'shana nasas lo keheter. The first time you eat the chazir is the hard one. Once you've gotten used to eating, well, it's not so bad. God doesn't care so much. So that's the nature of the way things are. The problem that, of course, happens is that you have pikuach nefesh, but you have the rest of Shabbos too. And there is a danger, and again, this I think varies from individual to individual. It depends on how much kovid rosh a person approaches, you know, both their Shabbos and the pikuach nefesh on Shabbos with. But there is a larger concern for the spiritual welfare of the doctors who are engaged in chil Shabbos. And again, it's not that we have the option of saying, don't be mechal Shabbos, you have to do so. But whatever doctors are told, whatever they're advised sometimes, in certain circumstances, I think that's a consideration that has to be prominent. What the Baalei HaMusar often refer to as halavavos nimshachos achar ha'pu'ulos, that our actions, the way we believe in Yadus, the way we change characters, not by most of us believe, or the mainstream, is not contemplative meditation. You don't sit and mull your character. What you do is you want to become a Baal Chesed, so you engage repeatedly acts of Gemilas Chasadim, and that's how you become a Baal Chesed, that's how you change your character. And in the same way, a person becomes, you know, a Shomer Shabbos Kados, you know, not by theoretically, you know, contemplating the issues, but by his Shmir Shabbos. And when a person is forced to be Michal Shabbos, and I say forced, it can often have a detrimental effect. So when posts can handle issues like this, when Rabbanim handle issues like this, that's a consideration that also has to play. That even in circumstances where something might be mutter, ayyidei atzmo, you know, considerations of doing ayyidei nachri, because that will make an impression upon the person that Shabbos, even though we're doing it, but you know, we're doing it differently, I think that is a very important consideration. David? No. I mean, there were other things also, whether he was writing things down, you know, it was sort of, you know, how he picked up, you know, I don't know, I'm not convinced, I think shinui is an abused category, but you know, even how he picked up the phone or the things that he did, you know, I didn't, you know, again, I'm projecting, you know.
I understand what you're saying. So, I think that's a very important idea, but when the Rambam, initially,
yeah. So the difference, but you have to understand, the Rambam's circumstance of Pikuach Nefesh may not have been ours. It may not have been someone who gets called on every Shabbos, or every Shabbos, the Michal Shabbos. It means, all of a sudden, the case comes up, you know, don't figure out a term, how you're going to call the fire department. You grab the phone, and you call, and you do whatever you have to do. That's not the same as a person who knows that the Pikuach Nefesh is coming. I mean, there are, I don't know how mainstream on post-game, but there are probably post-game, in fact, I'm fairly certain that those who write, when doctors have to be on call on Shabbos, and they know virtually they guarantee you call to the hospital, those who write, they have to go there before Shabbos. You know, so there is a difference between someone who gets called once in, you know, out of the blue, versus a person, you know, who knows that he's going to be called. So yeah, I agree, there is a balance. Hutra d'chuyah certainly plays a halachic role when it's efshar ayyidei shinui and so on. But I'm saying even if you hold hutra, there still is a larger meta halachic consideration of the person's spiritual well-being. Any other questions?